This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Taylor Quimby, sitting in for Virginia Prescott. 100 years ago this month, the United Kingdom, France, and the Russian Empire declared war on the Ottoman Empire. America's midterm elections brought a 4-seat gain for Senate Democrats, Republicans won 63 House seats, and the United States issued a patent for the first modern bra. In the ensuing century, the brassiere has been put on and taken off without fanfare by millions of women the world over, save a few notables like Jane Russell, Janet Leigh in Psycho, Madonna, or famously not worn by Gloria Steinem and others in the women's lib movement of the late 1960s. To find out more about the significance of this typically hidden item, Virginia chatted with Lynn Burady, associate professor and chair of fashion and textile technology at SUNY Buffalo.
Lynn, welcome to Word of Mouth.
No, thank you, Virginia.
Tell us about the origin of the bra.
Well, actually, we see images of a bra-like garment dating back hundreds of years. But the more modern bra came out of almost a rebellion of wearing the corset, which was extremely tight, uncomfortable to wear, and women would loosen the corsets when they were home. And so the inventor of the modern brassiere wanted something a little less hurtful, I guess, less cumbersome, more comfortable.
And who was she?
The inventor of the modern brassiere, the woman who got the patent, is Mary Phelps Jacob, who in later years was also known as Caress Crosby.
Yeah, she was a kind of a socialite, but became a pretty fascinating modernist. Tell us what this first bra actually looked like.
Well, basically what she did is she took two pieces of fabric and sewed them together in the center. So they were about 6 inches wide at the center, fully covering the breast, and she just added some ties that would go around the back and around the neck. The fabric was on the bias, so it created sort of a sling for breasts.
Well, I understand that her response from her friends was they were pretty shocked because she could actually move.
Yes, and be comfortable in it.
Well, it makes sense that the first bra might have been made by a woman, but the war effort actually helped displace the popular, though very constraining, corset. What was going on there?
Yeah, well, corsets were made with iron, steel, and so when the war came around, the war effort needed the steel to use for weaponry, shipbuilding, etc., and so women were actually encouraged to not buy corsets, and all that metal went into the war effort.
So when did the whole lettering, you know, the A, double A through D happen?
That happened in the 30s. And it was a company called S.H. Camp & Company. And what they did is they correlated the women's breasts to letters of the alphabet, A through D. And then other companies started taking up this cup sizing and starting using multiple band sizes and the multiple hook and eye closure positions. So the 30s, we really see a lot of updates and more of the modern features of what we see now as the modern bra.
I found it interesting, Lynn, reading up on the history that an item worn on a daily basis by so many women was influenced very powerfully by just a handful of men. I'm thinking of Howard Hughes as one and Frederick Mellinger of Fredericks of Hollywood. What did these two do, respectively?
Well, Fredericks of Hollywood, Frederick Mellinger was really an interesting gentleman. He started padding the bras and constructing them in such a way to push breasts up and together to create the cleavage.
Oh, the first Howard, Wonder Bra?
Yes, you could say that, yes. But it was a totally different look than what we had been seeing in, you know, the 20s, which were very flat, the 30s, a little more feminine, but the 40s, we really get that hourglass look. Mm-hmm. And Frederick's Mellinger really helped with that. And then we have Howard Hughes, who really helped lift the breasts, I guess is a good way of putting it. He really helped with the structure of the bra, and particularly for larger-breasted women, which were really, we didn't pay them much attention up until that time.
It's funny that this item that is, it's at once practical and highly symbolic, it's mundane and erotic. You know, it stood for women's oppression in 1968 when women started burning bras. There was in 1969 an obituary written for the bra, which I guess was kind of premature.
Yes. I think the idea was interesting, and I think it certainly brought attention to the feminist movement. But it really is, I mean, the bra came out at one point as for health reasons, which I find interesting considering what they called as health reasons. So it wasn't looked at as a sexual garment that it was for these women who were burning their bras.
Well, what was the health argument for wearing a bra?
Oh, some of them were rather ridiculous, but it would help you breathe better. It would help you take care of, if flattening your breast was not considered good. I mean, we do know now that going without a bra will make your breast sag. So it's more of a visual than it is a health reason. But before they were really talking about it, how bad it would be for your health not to wear a bra.
Any other significant moments in the bra's 100-year history come up for you, Lynn?
Well, I think we really need to thank the first jog bra, which was the first athletic bra for women, which really helped us participate in sports more comfortably.
And when did that come out?
That came out in the 90s, I believe. The Wonder Bra also came out a little bit earlier in the 70s.
Well, I can't help but think of Madonna wearing the Jean-Paul Gaultier, you know, those conical, almost rocket-looking bras on stage.
Well, that was really controversial at the time, and she was Madonna was really forward-thinking. She was the first woman to stop hiding bras and start wearing bras on stage and really emphasizing the breasts. I think of them as the boy toy bras because they were the men in her dance troupe wore them as well, and they were very long and conical and very out there and in your face, very forward at that time.
I have a wonderful Texan friend who says that her favorite moment of the day is when she takes her bra off. I mean, they're still not really comfortable. Where are we going from here on the design of the bra?
Well, actually, one of the reasons why they're uncomfortable is because most women don't wear the right bra size.
Boy, we've been hearing that for decades, haven't we?
Well, and our bra size changes as we gain and lose weight, as we have children, as we age, our body changes. So we need to be fitted for a bra every few years. And you don't. It's not like, you know, I always wear a size such and such. No, you don't necessarily want to always wear the same size. You want to wear the size that's comfortable for you. They shouldn't be digging into your sides or into your shoulders. But we are seeing a lot of, well, we're seeing it two different ways. One, there's this emergence of the past, 7 to 10 years of the little bralettes in tops.
Mm-hmm.
So the little tank tops that have, like, the shelf bra.
Right.
So I find that a fascinating development. And we also have some companies now. I know Victoria's Secret actually did a body scanning study on over 5,000 women to try to identify breast shapes, identify cup sizes, and how to better identify or enhance these sizes. Jockey International has just come out with a new bra fitting system that women do in their home, which is interesting. They send you a series of cups that you try on to see which cup fits your breast the best, and then the band is completely separate from it. So you can have a more customized fit to your body.
We've come a long way, baby.
Yes, we have.
Virginia Prescott there, speaking with Lynn Bourady, Associate Professor and Chair of Fashion and Textile Technology at SUNY Buffalo. If you'd like to see what some of the earliest bras looked like, including some pre-patent ones from the Middle Ages, we've created a slideshow on our website. It's very safe for work, and you can find it at wordofmouthradio.org. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Taylor Quimby, sitting in for Virginia Prescott. You can join us for more Word of Mouth tomorrow at 2 on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its board of trustees,
or its underwriters. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.